Hello and welcome to the Rogue Monkey podcast and our 100th episode. My name's Kev, I'm the host of the show, and I could not be more excited to share today's interview with you. It's been over 4 years since episode one, and yet somehow we've made it here. A huge shout to everyone who's joined us on the journey, the guests, the listeners, the supporters behind the scenes. A huge thank you to everyone who's helped us get to this point. Across the last 4 years, we've spoken to Red Arrows pilots, actors, Olympians, cancer survivors, military veterans, authors, founders, TV presenters, and so many more. And somehow we've managed to get to 100 conversations, sharing these amazing and inspiring stories with some wonderful people. Our guests today are a husband and wife duo that I've known for more than a decade. They both featured in season 2 of the podcast, embarking on a quest to try and win a world championships in one of the most grueling races on earth. And in the autumn of 2023, that dream was realised. Today, I'm talking to Lucy and Reese Charles Barkley. We explore from the early years through to the moment that it all came together, as Lucy crossed the line in Kona in October 2023 as Ironman world champion. We dive into the highs, the lows, the injuries, the reflections, and for those watching on video, their four-legged friends Pickle and Lola drop in for a little bit of a chat too. I couldn't be happier to mark 100 shows sharing their journey to the top of the world. They're both incredible athletes, but more importantly, they're also both incredible people. And I think it's a really nice way to pull together what's been an amazing journey over the last 4 years for everyone who's been with us, but for also new people on the show to kind of get a feel for what we do and how we do it. And this episode absolutely embodies that. So we're going to get into it and our 100th episode and our conversation with Lucy and Reese Charles Barkley. Can't believe we're here. And guys, like, super grateful for you obviously sharing some time. Two of the busiest people I know, and you seem to never stop traveling around the world and throwing yourself into these incredible adventures through sport. But for anyone who's not crossed paths with you guys before, do you want to give us, I guess, a little bit of an introduction? And of course, the third guest for those watching us, of the dog that's jumped in on screen as well.
Yeah, so I'm Reese Barkley. I think I've been on the podcast once before. I know Kevin from back in the days when we were both swimming at Hertfordshire University. We were flatmates together. And I'm an ex-professional triathlete turned coach, and now basically just look after all things Team Charles Barkley, follow my wonderful wife around the world, helping her win world titles and through the hard times when she's got injuries and things like that. So that's what I am, that's what I do. Over to you.
Yeah, and I guess I'm the other half of Team Charles Barkley, or part of Team Charles Barkley. There's a few members involved, but yeah, like Reece said, I've been on the podcast once before, met both yourself, Kevin, and Reece while swimming at Hatfield Swimming Club back in the day. So background in swimming, and then switched to triathlon in around 2014, which was meant to be just a bit of fun, try something new, and quickly ended up being a bit more than that, and is now my career. And I've now got 3 world titles to my name across different distances in triathlon. So yeah, it's been a crazy journey. Last year, winning the Ironman World Championships, which was something I've been working towards since 2017. So last year was a pretty epic one for us.
Well, it's almost where do we start? But I think, I guess, just in a little tip of the hat to the previous episode, we spoke back in 2020, which feels like a lifetime ago. And I think at that point, obviously, you were full-time in the sport by that point, and you guys were still kind of exploring all the different aspects of it in terms of overcoming injuries and all the other things that come with being an Ironman. But to have kind of gone on this journey over the last 4 years and now achieved that, kind of where are you guys right now? What does that look like, having, I guess, in your mind, dreamed of climbing Everest metaphorically, and now you've done it, and you've had a bit of time now to process it and kind of take it all in? I know we caught up before Christmas, and even then you said it was still kind of just a bit of a blur.
Yeah, I think, I mean, speaking for myself, I feel in a really, really good place. And since I've kind of got back into full-time training this year, I've just been really enjoying it. I think it made me realise how much of a weight it had been of trying to win the Ironman World Championships and having been second four times, I think it really had started to grind me down a little bit. And I didn't really realize at the time, but there was a lot of pent up stress. And I always felt like I have to hit this session. Like everything depends on me hitting this workout and the next one and the next one. And now I just feel like this massive relief this year and doing my training. I'm like, actually, I'm just doing this because I love it. No other reason. And yes, I've achieved the thing I've been working towards for a really long time. And a lot of people had said, well, does that mean you're not motivated anymore? And I feel like, actually, I feel even more motivated now because I've almost got this pressure's off a little bit. I've achieved that goal I've wanted for ages. And now I can go out there and say, I want to go and try and go as fast as I can on this distance, or I want to go and do that race just because I've always wanted to go there. I feel a little bit more free in what I'm doing. So I've definitely been enjoying it these past couple of months as we started out the year and really cracked on with the training. But yeah, I've just been very happy with life, which is great.
How about you, Reese? Because from your perspective, Reese, we're talking like a decade journey, and it's not a small chunk of time. And obviously, given the fact you're together as well, there's two angles to it. So could you answer that, firstly from a coach's point of view, but also from the husband point of view, because it's a huge commitment.
Yeah, I think from a husband point of view, obviously, it's amazing. I can almost instantly tell that Lucy's less stressed about things than she would have been in previous years leading into training sessions. If something doesn't always go quite right, sometimes I think there was a bit of frustration, or almost like a little bit like, well, the day's ruined, so I can't hit that workout properly, because it was like a big pressure building up that I've got to hit this race. I don't want to be known as this person who always comes second. You know, coming second at the Ironman World Championships is an amazing achievement, but Lucy had done it three times, and it was becoming a little bit of a monkey on the back, so to speak, and she wanted to get rid of it. We're sat here now early February, so, you know, it's early into the 2024 season, but we've been away for a 5-week training camp, and yeah, can very clearly see that Lucy's enjoying her training, a lot less stress and a lot more enjoyment than I'd seen in a long time. So yeah, that's pretty good. From a coaching side of things, we are about to embark on a different sort of training this year. Lucy's opted to race the T100 series, which is the new PTO 100 kilometer distance. For those of you who don't know, that's about, that's a 2 kilometer swim, an 18 kilometer run, and an 80 kilometer bike. I've done that in the wrong order. So it's less than half the amount of duration that you would do in an Ironman. So it's a significantly different challenge and sort of a different way of training. At the moment, we're in base phase, or Lucy's in base phase. So it hasn't looked massively different, but it will look quite different. So from a coaching point of view, I'm not coaching Lucy, setting the program. That's done by Lucy's coach, Dan Narang, but I'm helping him deliver that session. So I'm taking Lucy's blood lactate levels in training and relaying what I'm seeing in training back to him. Don't know what the difference is yet. Like I say, it's early days, but I think it's exciting to have won the biggest race of Lucy's career and then instantly have something different to sink her teeth into. I think perhaps if it hadn't been the T100 series, she might have been a little bit less motivated. But because this is a new challenge, she hasn't won one of those races yet in that series. It's almost given her like a really strong motivation for this year, whereas maybe she wouldn't have had that quite as much if it hadn't been for this series this year. I think the motivation still very much is to go back to Kona in 2025 and try and defend her win there. I won't say title, because a lot of people got annoyed about Lucy saying that a few weeks ago, but that's a conversation for another time.
So I'm curious there, because you used the word motivation a few times, and it's It is hard. It's grueling. And even if you don't follow Ironman closely, just the stats when you start reeling off the training volume and the racing volume, like it's a really hard thing. So I guess one of the things I want to start with is, how do you, knowing what you know now, because obviously perhaps 5, 6, 7 years ago, we were still, you know, trying to figure a lot of these things out, and you've kind of now got to a point where you know what works, what doesn't, you know, what the injury risks are and all those sorts of things. How do you prepare before an event that ultimately you know is testing you to your limits? Because there's a lot of sports that people do where they don't reach breaking point every time they compete or do an activity. You know, I go out and do a park run every few weeks, but I'm not running to the point where I'm probably going to put myself in hospital. So from both your perspectives, I guess from a bit of motivation, a bit of psychology, how do you get yourself into a place before every event you know you're going to push yourself to 10 out of 10?
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things with Ironman racing, and why I personally have only ever done, like, I think the most Ironmans I ever did in 1 year was quite early on in my career, where I did 3. And I do think that that's around my physical limit, is to do 3 Ironmans in a year. And even then, I don't think you can do them to your highest ability, because you just wouldn't be able to recover and come back to do another one. So I guess going into Kona last year, I knew for me it was probably going to be the last race of the year. And it was the last race in Kona for 2 years. So I really, really wanted to win it in Hawaii, which is where the journey started for us. And I guess I just knew it didn't matter. I was just going to lay everything out there. If I was taken off the finish line on a stretcher and taken straight to the medical tent, I didn't care, as long as I gave everything. And I think I always like to race like that, where it's, actually, even if I don't win, I know I've given it absolutely everything that I have, and that way you can be satisfied. So if you want to do that multiple times a year, that's quite difficult. So the distance in itself asks so much of the body, and if you don't do every fine detail correctly, you probably won't finish, or you will be walking on the marathon. And it's taken us years and years of learning of, this is how I need to fuel myself, what nutrition I'm going to use, and this is how much power I need to press on the bike, what's realistic. And again, the training for the running to know what is actually going to be realistic for that marathon at the end. So it's been years and years of learning. And I think the mental side, I don't know if it's something you can teach, really. It's something I've developed since I was a kid, being a swimmer, which is such a relentless, grueling sport that it does, I think, mold you into a different kind of athlete mentally, and taking that into an Ironman has been a real weapon of mine, I think.
How about you, Reese? Because it's almost like you wear two hats when you stand behind the, I guess, as a supporter, as a husband, you want obviously your wife to be happy and healthy and enjoy the experience, but equally as a coach, you're going, well, this is going to hurt. You know, there's no two ways around it. So how do you navigate that, like, from the other side of it?
Yeah, that's a really difficult thing. Like, that's why when you see me on race day, I'm normally very quiet, don't want to speak to anyone, leave me alone. I've got a lot of nerves, because I know that Lucy will push herself to, you know, unhealthy limits sometimes and beyond. But the other hat, when I put that on, is like, well, actually, she's a racer and she wants to win. And, you know, there's other girls out there willing to put that all on the line as well. You know, everyone out there at that level is the best of the best, pushing themselves to the limit. You never want to see anyone go past the limit. And yes, in Kona, I was really worried, not just because I knew Lucy had the calf trouble early on into the run, but I've raced Kona twice myself and just know that just getting through that event in those conditions can be, you know, grueling. You see the videos of people are absolutely fine, and then all of a sudden they just have a catastrophic heat blow up. Yeah, that's always at the back of your mind. And I've always said to Lucy, if I thought that even if she was winning a race, her health was, you know, severely compromised, I would pull her off the course. Because, it, you know, at the end of the day, health is more important than anything. But yes, a pulled muscle or a torn muscle can heal, but, you know, heat stroke and things like that can have some severe long-term damages. So anything like that, I'm always very wary of. But yeah, it's difficult. I think we train for that. Like, we know And that is why we're so meticulous with the training, particularly me observing things all the time. I'm measuring. I know what her limits are, and we really, really hone in on that in training so that she knows on race day, okay, stay within X, Y, Z parameters. Yes, there's a little bit of flexibility to adjust to what's going on a race course, but if it's too far above what you're capable of, you sometimes just have to accept that someone else is having a better day than you, or, you know, you might catch them back up on the run, for example, if someone's going too hard on the bike. It's really hard for a racer to do that, but I think and to be honest, there's not many situations where Lucy's in that kind of environment, but that's where the T100 series that we're doing this year will be interesting, because it'll be a lot more tactical and closer racing. Whereas most of the Ironmans, if not all the Ironmans Lucy's done, she's been out on the front from the swim and virtually not seen anyone the entire day. So it's completely self-measured effort, whereas we're about to embark on a different type of racing where it's head-to-head, tactical, very, very easy to get carried away and push yourself a bit too hard. And some of the environments we're racing in are hot as well. So we're in Singapore, for example, this year. That's very, very hot and humid. So it's exciting. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting race series. The good thing is these ladies, the top 16 ladies in the world, have all signed up. And there's 8 races in the series. And they are contracted to do at least 6 of those. So you're going to see the best of the best racing each other regularly, whereas normally we only really get to see those race each other once or maybe twice a year. So it's going to be really, really exciting racing this upcoming season.
Yeah, and certainly with the London event on home soil, both me and a lot of people in our circles are excited to come down and see you guys on home turf, but I'm sure we'll cover that maybe nearer the time. But I'm curious a little bit in the sense of... I know obviously we spoke back in December, but I guess even then it was still, there was a lot of reflecting going on. And now sitting here and you look back on what was a crazy kind of couple of years with the various injuries and all those sorts of things. Is there, I mean, I guess what I want to get to is there's so many emotional hurdles you guys have had to overcome to get to even the start line in Kona last year. And perhaps maybe take us through a little bit of the lead up to that, because there, if you list out, for example, the race where you broke your foot getting into the swim, you know, which I know obviously you didn't know you'd done it at the time, but if you list out all of these things over the kind of last 2-3 years with all the various injuries and the hurdles and the scans and the doctors and everything, can you just take us through maybe that 6 to 8 weeks leading up to it, like almost excluding what happened afterwards, but just kind of where you guys were at with that, because that's such a journey to go on.
Yeah, I guess where do we start? I mean, obviously, breaking my foot in May of last year during a half Ironman was like a real low, because it was, I knew I wanted to win Kona last year. I knew that I almost felt in my heart, if I didn't do it last year, maybe I wouldn't try again. Maybe that would be too much. So when I broke my foot, I remember being really low for maybe a day. And then I was like, absolutely not, like, we're still going to make this happen. And we did. I mean, we've learned a lot from the injuries before, but we kind of just went, almost imagine that the foot isn't broken, or you're just removing your foot from the equation of your training, and you're going to do everything you can that's just not going to make that foot worse. So basically put a moon boot on, swam in a moon boot, cycled in a moon boot. I couldn't immediately go on the cross trainer, I don't think, but very quickly could bring that in with a moon boot. Reese had me on a rowing machine going max in a moon boot. It was like my new accessory that I never want to see again. But I think that massively paid off, because then we went away on a training camp. I remember flying there in the moon boot, and then in the taxi to the training location, I took the boot off and was like, that's it now. I'm done with that. We were pretty confident the foot was fully healed at that point, so we knew we could remove it. And then we went on a bit of a training block towards the PTO Singapore race, which for me was just, I knew I wanted to do a race before Kona to get the confidence back in my body that I could race at race intensity for a full triathlon. So I remember us going to that race and I was almost racing a bit scared in my own body, like, is it going to break again? And we only had one goal for the race, which was finish it healthy. Know that that's behind you now. And then we do the final block of work for Hawaii at home, which I think we had 6 weeks at home. And it was quite tough to do heat prep in the UK, as you know, the weather isn't like Hawaii. So it was a lot of indoor training. I think I probably did one run and one bike ride outside in 6 weeks. Everything else was indoors, relentless. I remember Reece helping me every single day to get through that. And it was a really, really focused block. I felt very confident. We quickly made big improvements, particularly on the running, which I was like, this is exactly what I need for Hawaii, to have that confidence. And we just got on with it. It was like head down, get the work done. And I remember flying out to Hawaii thinking I could not have done a thing more for this race this year. So there was a confidence. And then we had quite a big confidence knock a week out from the race when we was on a training run, and Reece will tell you, I basically turned on the spot like I was on the squash court. And quite quickly after that, I was like, oh, I've got some quite bad pain. It feels like it's in my Achilles. Now I'm a bit worried because we're a week out from the race, and you don't want any doubt when you're going into that race. There was quite a big bit of doubt then that, is this going to really hold me back or just play on my mind? And we had to quite significantly reduce down my final run sessions leading into the race, because every time I ran, it got a little bit worse. We had my physio with us working on it every single day. And I think even he was a bit worried, but he didn't really say anything. And then on race day, I was like, well, just ignore it. And I do remember feeling it running out of the swim. I was like, I can feel it a little bit, but okay, let's get on with it. And then on the bike, I couldn't feel it at all. So I was like, right, just let's make as much time as possible on this bike so that at least I have a bit of a cushion on the run. And then getting onto the run, I think it was maybe even before mile one, I was like, oh no, that's a really bad pain in my calf now. And then I remember seeing Reece at mile five and telling him it was terrible, but he didn't really know what context I was saying it was terrible. And then I just kept running. And I remember Reece saying, well, you're running as fast as anyone on the course. And that was the first time I really looked at my watch and looked at the pace and was like, oh, well, I'm in severe pain, but I'm running the exact pace that we'd kind of said this would be ideal if you can hold that sort of pace. We knew that in training I probably could have gone a bit faster, but we were like, that's fine, that pace will be good. And then I remember seeing Reece again, maybe at the half marathon point, and I'd had sort of waves of a lot of pain and then less pain. And every time I had less pain, I just pushed the pace a little bit more. Then the pain would get worse because I'd up the pace. And then I finally remember seeing Reece with about 8 kilometres to go. And I think you said, have we got this?
Mm.
And I was like, we've got this. Like, I don't even care now. I've got 8 kilometres to run. I'm going to be getting there. Like, I'm not stopping. And I do actually remember thinking in my mind then, just imagine you're out running in the forest with your two dogs. And it kind of just took my mind away from the pain. And I was like, just run it in. And yeah, I was holding my breath a bit because I was like, if my leg completely goes, then what am I going to do? Crawl it in? Like, have I got enough time to crawl to the finish line? I don't think so. So I think even Reece and my sister Holly didn't want to breathe until I crossed that finish line. And then we could finally all celebrate together. But I mean, it was, if there was ever a way to win and to overcome so much adversity on the journey to getting to the start line and then in the race itself, I think now it's just, it means so much more. I mean, it couldn't have meant more anyway, having to be on like a 8-year journey to get to the point of winning. But yeah, what a journey it was.
It's really interesting because you mentioned there around Holly, and I think, you know, and your physio as well, and of course Reece, and having that team around you, a sport like this, and for context for anyone who's never watched an Ironman event, you're talking, you know, the best part of a day is involved of racing, you know, and I always get staggered when I'm looking at a race that's going on and having breakfast, and then I'm sitting down prepping for dinner and the race is coming to an end again. They have been moving all day, and the stress, I guess, in the run up to that, but also during it, of the roller coaster that you go on as a team, because like you said, you might see someone for 5 seconds, 10 seconds and give them one sentence of information and they don't know what's going on inside of your head. And you know, it's been really fascinating, I guess, to watch at a distance, because knowing how much both of you are personally invested in this, obviously there's all of the training and all of the other stuff that goes into it, but it's a very much a family thing that you've done as a group to kind of get to this point where actually you've achieved your dream. So can we just talk a little bit about that team element of it, Reese? I don't know if you want to talk a bit more about, I guess, the process leading up to Kona, but also that experience of Kona itself, of having the support team there.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, on race day, it's horrendous, because I have pretty much everyone, all family, friends, texting me for information because I'm on the course, but I have very limited amount of information. I'm not allowed to move alongside Lucy because it's a coaching infringement and she could get a penalty. So I get a moment in time where I'm stood on the side of the road, she passes me and gives me one or two words. And I basically then just have to try and decipher what that means and relay it to everyone else. But yeah, the team aspect, we have a very close knit team. Like, I honestly think the physio that we've got, his name's Michael, hopefully he'll listen to this. He's fixed Lucy from, well,
how many times?
Yeah. Lost count of the amount of injuries Lucy's had, and then, or not so much injuries, but potential could be injuries, and he's straightened her up. And then obviously through the actual real big injuries as well, he's been really integral in rehabilitating and keeping everything loose. He's flown out to Hawaii twice with us now. And yeah, he's been really instrumental in helping Lucy get to the start line fit and healthy. It's difficult because it does, a lot of people say, oh, Lucy's very injury prone. And yes, she is, but I think it probably is a little warped on how much she is, because she's so much in the public eye. Like, we're actually like looking at it, and Lucy said to me last year, why is this always me? I always get injured, no one else does. And when you look at it, actually there are quite a lot of people who do get injured quite a lot throughout the season, but you just don't hear about it as much, or they don't say it as much. And then this leads me to my point of Holly, who's Lucy's sister. She does all of Lucy's media with Lucy, and we document everything. We've always been, when we started doing YouTube and before that on Instagram, one of the things we wanted to try and portray, because we came from the age group side of things, was the highs and lows of being a professional athlete and an age group athlete before that. We ultimately set out to do triathlon as an after career to swimming, which was our previous career. So at the beginning, we documented how difficult it was to transition from swimming to triathlon. And then we documented how difficult it is to go from age group to professional, and so on and so on and so on. So we've always had that transparency around us. Got to the point probably about 3 years ago where it was like, okay, this is becoming a full-time job, documenting this and doing this properly. And that's when Holly got involved, and she's just been absolutely amazing. Lucy's sister, obviously, so Lucy feels comfortable around her. She can just, you know, she knows when to be a fly on the wall and just capture the content, and knows Lucy's mood. She knows whether Lucy's having a really hard training session and don't really ask too many questions, or she knows when Lucy's on a bit of downtime and can really press. So yeah, everyone around us has been fantastic, and we really couldn't have done it without them. Or we certainly couldn't have documented it how we could have, and Lucy definitely wouldn't have been on as many start lines. There's other members of the team as well who, you know, there's so many to reel off who deserve a mention, not least my parents and Lucy's parents, all but taken over my parents' gym. My dad had a boxing gym at the back of his garden, which we have invaded and turned into a triathlon retreat for us. He does a bit of training in there as well. We've got a fantastic manager, Evan, who deals with all the commercial financial side of things, which obviously we have a lot of fantastic sponsors, but with that comes a lot of responsibilities. He's very good at making sure that, you know, we're doing everything right from that side of things. And yeah, we have a broad spectrum of scientists who we know all around the country. Lucy's coach, Dan Lerang, who's, you know, probably if not the most well-renowned triathlete coach coach Gianfredino, coaches Annie Howe, coaches Lucy, coaches a whole array of fantastic athletes. He's been really, really good. Started working with him in 2021. It was myself doing it before that. But yeah, I guess we can touch on that. But before that, I was sort of doing a bit of everything, whereas around that time, especially after COVID, gave us a lot of time to reflect on things. And it sort of turned out that I could be much better at being almost like the coordinator of everyone else, the middleman for everyone. So Dan does the coaching, he speaks to me, I speak to Lucy, and Holly does the media, she speaks to me, I speak to Evan, who speaks to the sponsors. It's kind of like just this really, really close knit. And, you know, we're still improving, but we've got it quite dialed down to a T now in terms of when we go into race week. We know, I'm probably waffling now, but we know when to dial down things on certain aspects and turn up other things on others. So, yeah.
I think there's an interesting point there. And obviously in my day job, I get to work around some incredible athletes. And I think people forget that as great as it is being in the public eye and having sponsors and all these other things, is like, you've got a job to do, which is to actually be the athlete. That's first and foremost. And to have that support network around you of family and friends and support staff, to actually be able to effectively shield you and protect what you're there to do, which is, you know, push your body to the absolute limit multiple times a year. And I think it's really important we mention that, because I think it's very easy for a lot of people to see outcomes, i.e., you know, a BBC Sport article or whatever it is, and go, oh my God, you've won the world title. That's amazing, which of course it is. But very often that snippet, that soundbite, that headline actually doesn't do justice to everything else that goes on behind the scenes. And especially being husband and wife, as well as the professional working relationship, you go on that twice, you know. I want to flag that, because, as I say, I think a lot of people perhaps don't see all of that stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And you guys do such an incredible job, and the amount of people that who dabble in triathlon say to me, oh my God, I watch their channel all the time, and it's so helpful to see like the honesty and the insights that you guys give. And I want to get onto, I guess, one really specific question. I know you mentioned around a few injuries, but what's been, I guess, one or two of your biggest takeaways in terms of both managing and coming back from injuries? Because a lot of people go, I'm injured, that's it, it's done, I'm finished with this goal, this ambition. But you've overcome that many times now. So from both your perspective, what's been the game changer or the biggest thing that you thought, that's helped me get through this?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with any injury is obviously patience. So in the beginning, it's giving yourself that grace period of, okay, I'm injured now, I'm going to need to let my body heal and rest, and actually being stressed by it isn't going to help that situation. I think, as Reece said, we're very fortunate to have expert advice, but definitely if you can seek out the expert advice, that they would have had other athletes that have had the same sort of thing and be able to give the feedback on that. And obviously any expert you ever speak to is always overly cautious. So we've always taken that into consideration when I had the big injury in 2022, when I had the hip stress fracture. They basically told me to write off the entire year, and I didn't really want to do that. I was like, I think I could get back for the second half of the year. And we took on the advice in the beginning to take that rest period, and then we started to think logically about, actually, if you're doing this particular exercise, it's going to have zero impact on the injured area, which is great. But then if you push it too much, your body is going to be having to mend the other muscles that have got the micro tears in training, and they're not going to mend the big injury that needs mending. So you still have to be quite clever in the load that you're giving to your body when you have an injury. And I think having follow-up scans is really important as well, to track the progress of the healing, which, again, these things come at quite a high cost. A lot of the time, I'm very fortunate that Red Bull have a massive kind of health team that can help me, and I've now made really good relationships with top specialists in the country that can give me that advice and say, actually, Lucy, you're on track, or actually, you're ahead of where we thought you would be with the mending. And yeah, it's just going step by step, really, and having a realistic timeline, not trying to be back super early for a race, and ultimately maybe letting things go. Like, that when I've been injured, there have been races that I've had to say, actually, that one's going to have to go, I'm not going to be ready for that one. And making sure you've got quite a big goal, but it is far enough out to know realistically I'll probably be good for that one. And that was what we did last year with Hawaii. It was like, that's the only race I want to get back for. It's the furthest one away. If we can do one before that, great. But if not, let's just work to that one. So being creative as well. I think one of the great things with triathlon is it's basically the ultimate cross training. So you see now a lot of runners will actually add maybe some cycling into their training, or swimmers actually do a bit of cycling in their training now. Or obviously we've always done strength and conditioning, which is a massive thing, but triathlon is the ultimate cross training sport. So let's use it to our advantage when you're injured and do the disciplines that you can, and maybe find, like, I actually really enjoyed rowing when I was injured. So we tried to be creative and, yeah, actually maybe make it a bit fun when you can't do what you normally do. Take the monotony out of your normal training, which might just be one individual sport, and add in something new and see if you can enjoy it. So, yeah, try and take the positives where you can, even though it's generally quite a negative situation when you're injured.
What about you, Reese? Because I think there's a, you know, not too far ago, we had another friend of mine, Phil, on the podcast, who did his first Ironman, which I know you sent him a lovely message about. And I think something that's really interesting, even when you speak to amateur triathletes, is that the impact it has on the people around them. So, Reese, what advice would you give to any, like, your weekend warriors, anyone out there who's just doing the sport because they enjoy it and they keep fit doing it, but they're injured, and actually it's their husband, their wife, their kids, their partners that are having to pick up the grumpiness, the I want to get training but I can't. How have you managed all of that over the years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's normally the relationship partner who, you know, has to deal with the emotional side of things. I think Lucy did a very good job of summarizing it from a logical standpoint of her frame of mind, but maybe selectively she's forgotten all the times where she would be really, really grumpy and cross, which obviously I can vaguely remember better than she can. But yeah, it's really hard. I mean, it's taking away the thing you love doing, and especially for age groupers. I mean, it's terrible for professionals because it's your livelihood, but for age groupers, I think it in a way it's worse because it's your hobby, it's your escape from your job, your real world, it's your leisure time. And when you take that away, you take away a whole social element that athletes get out of it. You take away, you know, you feel like you're rapidly losing really, really hard to get fitness. All of the above is true, but I think it's really important to zoom out and have perspective on things. It's really, really easy to completely catastrophize how bad an injury is. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're looking at 6 to 8 weeks of rest, of which you don't have to sit on the sofa doing nothing. You can almost always do something to improve some element of your fitness, even when you're injured. Okay, fine. If you have a terrible, you know, God forbid, spinal accident or something, you've got to be immobile, that's different. But if you've got a pulled calf or a fractured wrist or something, there's always something you can do. And actually, I think this year in particular, this was the second time round where Lucy almost picked up an injury midway through a season. We embrace the creativeness of it. Like I say, I mean, I remember having Lucy rowing with a roller skate on, because it was like, okay, you can't use that leg, so let's create something where you can go backwards and forwards. And and it became interesting. All right, it was, you know, probably not as good as her being able to do her normal training, but it kept it interesting. And really also, like, going back to the professionals when they get injured, there isn't a right and wrong way of doing things. Like, experts will tell you one thing, another expert will tell you another, but there's no expert in how to be Lucy Charles or how to be a professional athlete at that level, because you are subject number one. You are one person at the pinnacle or near the pinnacle of the sport. There is no right or wrong way, because no one's done exactly what you've done to be able to replicate, to say this is right, this is wrong. So sometimes you do have to just be creative and go with your instinct. Yes, we have the privilege of having scans to say along the way that was right, this was wrong. But if you're a professional athlete, you get injured, be creative. If you're an age group athlete and you get injured, put it into context and still try and be creative a little bit. And even if you really, really can't train, I would say if you're an age group triathlete, it's worth probably just going and volunteering at the club and being a coach for the evening, just so you're still getting that social boost that you would normally get. That would really help. Definitely doesn't help swallowing and feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah, and I would say a big thing as well is when you are injured, the worst thing you can do is go on social media and look what your competition is doing when they're training full time, and you're like, oh, I must be getting miles and miles behind what they're doing, so I'm doing nothing compared to them. And actually, in reality, fitness, it doesn't actually take too long to come back. Like, we've always been surprised at how quickly the fitness does come back, especially if you, like we said, you can be creative. You'll be surprised at how much fitness you maintain from even doing stuff that's different to your normal training routine. So yeah, just trust in the process and you'll definitely get back there.
Amazing. Now, there's one more bit of advice that I want to pull upon, and this is, I guess, an open book now. You've been on this journey of triathlon for more than a decade now, and sporting journeys. I've lost count of how many years this has been going on for, but reflectively, have you been able to distill it down to a few things that you've taken from this experience? And the context I'm getting at here is when they put up there was that footage captured of you with the people with the flames running in front of you as you came across the finish line. There was a beautiful photo of you three just kind of huddled and paused in a moment of reflection. Obviously, at that time, a reporter might ask you that question, but you can't give an answer because it hits you all in one moment. But now you've had that kind of few months to reflect on this journey. And I know, mindful that it's still ongoing and you've obviously got new goals and ambitions for the year, but what are kind of the key things or thing that you've both picked up to get to this point? What's been the either standout moment, experience, life lesson, whatever it is?
That's a good question. I think for me personally, I always envisioned that moment happening. Like, I knew that was going to happen at some point in our life. I didn't know when, and there was times where I thought maybe we'd lost hope of that, particularly during COVID when Kona was cancelled, obviously, because then, you know, it couldn't physically happen anyway. But I knew that for as long as Lucy would race Kona, I had this vision of that moment happening. And then when it finally did happen, it was like, I don't know. If you could bottle that up and sell it, you'd be a billionaire. That's how it felt. It was just amazing.
What about you, Lucy?
Both of us, like we said, it's been since we came into the sport, the dream was to win that race. We went there as amateurs in 2015, both done really well. And then I turned professional and knew that one day I wanted to try and win. And then when I came second the first time I lined up in 2017, I was like, well, I'm definitely going to do this at some point. And then to have to wait the amount of years we did, go through a pandemic, have two major injuries in that time, then running up that finish line, and I was in a lot of pain at the time. It's not how I envisioned that, but to be honest, I didn't care. I was like, as long as I get that finish tape, it doesn't matter. And then to be able to have Reese and my sister there and just greet them, and it almost was, I knew it wasn't, I hadn't just done it on my own, it was everyone. So it was like a thank you to everyone that's been on the journey and hadn't given up on me. I felt like it could have been easy for people to give up on me. I'd had so many setbacks, and at times it seemed like it was going to be impossible, but those people in our team never lost faith. They were always there. And I think now I value those people, those sponsors so much, because they stayed invested. And for me, it was like the ultimate thank you to them was to be able to go and win. And now I feel like it doesn't matter what else I do in my sporting career, I'll always be happy. And that was, again, something that worried me, was like, if I don't win this race, when I step away from the sport, will I be able to be happy? Because I put so much emotion and love and everything into wanting to achieve that goal. That's where the relief comes from again, because it's like, I feel like no matter what now, I can always be happy and satisfied. And there's a lot of athletes that don't get that. And it's really tough to then, when you step away from the sport, to kind of detach yourself from that, how much you wanted something and maybe you didn't quite achieve it. So I feel really fortunate that I did get to achieve that, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without all those people. So yeah, it's a huge thank you to them, and just a huge relief from my side that I did manage to do it.
Well, I don't know if we've got any final thoughts to pull it all together, but I do want to thank you guys for the way that you approach this journey, for everybody else who takes inspiration from it, because there's so many people who, as I say, follow the channels, follow the ups and the downs of it all, who, and even if they're nothing to do with triathlon, even if they're on their own sporting journey, you know, thank you from myself, because I remember sitting with you guys stupidly when I came out the back of, I think it was 2021, and I was like, I'm going to run a marathon next year, you know, the ignorance of how hard can it be, you know, and you guys just given me so much support and advice, and the amount of stuff you put out there that allows people to chase their own goals, their own ambitions, and then they take those lessons. And I think, again, knowing you guys, I guess, in different lives, the amount of things you take from your various sporting experiences and apply in your life to be able to share that with so many people and then learn from that is absolutely amazing. So I don't know if you've got a kind of a final message from each of us as we move into another exciting year and a new challenge.
Yeah, I think, well, thank you very much for your kind words. Like I say, we started doing this as almost an experiment from, you know, how fit are swimmers, basically. That was kind of like in the mindset of how far could we go as a swimmer. And then one thing led to another, and we've documented it. And I guess that is probably why so many people find Lucy and myself relatable. They see the struggles we go through. It resonates with them. You know, we open ourselves up for a lot of scrutiny by doing that as well, which, you know, is another thing that is quite difficult. And it's not always easy to share things, particularly when it's, you know, it's never all plain sailing. I think pretty much every single news outlet mentions Lucy in some way, shape or form, because they know that it normally sells their article better. For better or worse, she's in the news all the time, which is a new problem for us, but we wouldn't change it, because I think we've been authentic. We've been just documenting what we're going through, and it still sort of blows our mind what we've done. Like I said, I always believed it, but how we got there, it's almost like I'd have to spend a month writing down the process to how we got here, because I feel like most days we wake up and we just feel like the same old amateur triathletes that we were not so long ago doing this sport, and here we are, like, you know, people looking up to Lucy, and, you know, particularly younger kids coming through, they want to be the next Lucy Charles, and the Battle Braid movement that she's created is just it makes the hairs on your back of your neck stand up when you see these people who are so awestruck and to see Lucy, particularly at races and things like that. And that as well is just like, that's why we've been so open about things and documented it, because it's just been for that, you know, inspiring other people to do what we've done. And hopefully, yeah, we'll continue to do that. I do think there's still so much more, like, you know, as well as I do, Kevin, there's probably dozens of swimmers that we knew that probably could have been unbelievably good at triathlon, but they just never took to it because there wasn't, you know, probably wasn't even the thought process to do it. And now it's funny, I'm in my 30s now, and people that I was swimming with when I was a teenager are suddenly doing Ironman, suddenly doing triathlon, and messaging me out of the blue going, oh my God, I've just entered a half Ironman, I've seen your channel. And and I'm like, yeah, imagine, like, it's amazing they're doing that, but imagine all these kids now who are, you know, 16, 17, 18 year olds in individual sports, maybe they're not quite going to get to that Olympic standard, and they feel like they've failed because they haven't made the Olympic selection. There is so much potential and room to be a triathlete. And I really hope that, particularly now with the new PTO T100 series, they can chase that and just give it a go and just see. If we leave anything in this sport, I really hope that would be what it would be. Like, people look at our journey and go, I want to give that a go. Because you never know. There could be another 10 Lucy Charleses sat there just waiting to be the next world champion.
What about you,
yeah,
Lucy?
I mean, I couldn't really have said it any better, to be honest. I mean, we're just two normal people that went on a bit of an abnormal journey, but it means that anyone could do that. And like Reece said, we just got to the point with swimming where, okay, maybe I could have made it in swimming, but I'd lost that love and enjoyment. And I think that's so crucial to sport. So when we swapped to triathlon, the main goal was enjoyment, have fun with it. Let's see how far we can get, but never lose that sight of it being fun. And yes, not every session is fun, but we always try and have somewhere where we can get some enjoyment out of it. And we're very lucky that we do it together. But just give it a go. I think, like Reece said, with there's amazing opportunities in triathlon now with this T100 series. Most of the events that are happening will have age group races where you could do just the swim or just the bike or just the run, or you can do the whole thing, but you can kind of get immersed into the world of triathlon. So I hope that with that, it will spread awareness of this sport, get more people involved, and those athletes that maybe, yeah, they're in their individual sports and they're wondering whether they can keep going or will they actually make it, and they're just not enjoying it anymore, go and do a triathlon, see what you think. Who knows, you could get all the way to the top in that sport. And it's a shame that there aren't pathways from those individual sports that could lead you into triathlon. I think that would be crucial. We'd see far more athletes making it in the sport, but who knows, maybe that will come in eventually. But yeah, the more we can share our journey, I think it can only be better for everyone, hopefully. And we just thank everyone that follows us, supports us, and shares those positive words with us, because quite often we do see them, and it gives us that little boost in our training. So it works both ways. So massive thank you to everyone that's followed and supported us so far.
Well, I think it would be amiss for us not to finish off without saying a huge thank you to Lola and Pickle, who of course have been making guest appearances over the last 40 minutes or so. But to you both, you know, I said when we met up in December, like, it's been amazing to watch the journey as an athlete. Like, we always knew that you were an incredible athlete, and anyone who gets to the level you both did in swimming, you're obviously very, very gifted at what you do. But the personal journey you've both been on has been truly humbling to watch, and really now excited to see what comes next. So a huge thank you, and B, a huge good luck from everyone who follows you guys to say, go and smash it this year, and we'll be following you and shouting from the sidelines. Well, folks, that is 100 shows now in the bank. Again, so much love and gratitude for both Lucy and Reece opening up and sharing their amazing journey with us. All the links to their socials, their website, and more can be found in the show notes. Please also make sure to check out Holly Charles Photography, also linked, as she captures and shares so much of Lucy and Reece's adventures, and it really is amazing to see. Where we are for episode 200, who knows? But please be sure to hit subscribe however you're joining us today. And perhaps if you can share this episode with one person that you think would benefit from hearing a little bit of inspiration from today's two amazing guests. Thanks for being part of the Road Monkey podcast community, and we look forward to sharing another episode with you very soon.